are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Talking about the love of art, and I've been given the joy of showing some of my work to you and to talk a little bit about it. This is a painting of the Grampians, and you probably realise that, with Hall's Gap in the middle, and that's my painting. And like all artists, the painting is still at home. We'll put it up there for a little while where Shady Grove is after the service this week actually. But an artist never quite finishes the painting, so I've just got a little bit of fiddling to do, and I shall bring it in. But I completed it for you, especially my friends in this church. It was painted with the COVID virus very much on my mind. And so I've named this particular painting The Valley of Sadness, The Valley of Hope 2021. And I am delighted to have a poem written by Charlie Madden entitled Hope to read to you. Hope by Charlie Madden. Fresh apples and pears, the shrieks of the children as they chase in the mall and talk of new puppies and the joy that they bring. Hope by the yard, given by news of Greenland being led by women. Powered by nature, where even the prisons are kind. Soon to be copied by the rest of the world, perhaps, as the carbons meet their demise and their calcified politicians, I love that, retire into the distance. Fresh apples and pears, sunshine and fresh air, free power and clean water, a future not far away. I've always loved drawing and painting. On my 11th birthday, I was given a little red Enid Blyton diary. In it was mention of a competition, draw your favourite Enid Blyton character. I entered, and I was living in Broken Hill at the time, with a drawing of Mr. Pinkwhistle. I received a prize, accompanied by a short letter by the author. So this is from the lady herself, and I was 11 at the time, so that was many moons ago. Green Hedges, and you'll know that address. Dear Janet, my warm congratulations on winning one of my prizes. You did very well, and you deserve a prize. I'm very pleased to send it. Well done. Love from Enid Blyton. That's in the book. The book is Little Women and Good Wives by you-know-whom, Louisa M. Alcock. And you probably also know that she was a Unitarian. Peter and I share this love of painting. Both being painters ourselves and vastly enjoying the incredible output of others. We have attended classes together. One was in Ararat, taken by a young teacher. And the class, because living in Ararat, he used to come back to Adelaide for weekends and so on. And the class said, we always knew when you weren't there. The other was in the Flinders Ranges, plein air, beautiful, you know, painting gum trees and things like that. And I painted a lovely gum tree for my sister. And Rosie lives in Auckland, and she's moved from her home to a smaller place in Hobart, I apologise. She's moved from her own home to a smaller unit which is attached to her daughter's home. For the past few years I have painted approximately 20 paintings. These are painted on canvases that are the varying size, the valley being the largest, and that's 600 by 900, so it's quite a large painting. I use the medium of acrylic, a bright, fast-drying medium, and you can paint over mistakes that are not satisfactory, and that's very handy. I paint for my family and my friends. I have also entered paintings of our grandchildren in the Barra Portrait Competition. This year, our granddaughter Genevieve will submit a portrait in the under 12 section. Here we have me, and we have Evie as a cowgirl, and Grandma as a cat. And they were put up in the Barra competition last year, and because the idea was sort of relationships, and we got a high commendation. Do you think it's a good life or something? Isn't she beautiful? She's now 6, going on 16. My paintings can be found far and wide. This one is in Quebec with Sebastian's parents, Sebastian being Justine, our daughter's partner. They've had it for a number of years now, and in fact my technique's changed. You may see that if you're observant of art. When they received it, they placed it in their lounge room because it's important to them as the example of a place where people lived, you know, many, many years ago. It was built by Horrocks, who was a young explorer and witnessed, you know, sort of Horrocks Highway, for one of his workmen. Yes, you've perhaps seen it when you've driven through Penwortham. It's there on your right. Alex, our daughter, who's now in Auckland, has two of our paintings. This one is of the Grampians. She used to have it next to where she chanted, but at the moment it's wrapped up somewhere because she's moved house and it had to be put away for a while. Now the next one is actually a photograph, but I did paint this for Alexandra, and Peter and I went up to Darwin on the GAN, which was a lovely thing to do, and we were having dinner outside on a small wharf, and Peter took this beautiful photograph and I painted it for Alexandra. But you heard me light a candle for her earlier. We did ask for a photograph, but she's far too busy to do that. So there is the original photograph, and she has a painting of that. We greatly enjoy having coffee and lunching at a small restaurant in Dulwich. I offered to paint some Australian rural scenes for the owner hostess. If you have been to that cafe, she is the most delightful woman. Her name is Kylie. But she said, I'd love some scenes of the sea. So, over a period of time, I painted the following 4 sea scenes, using photographs, while our family was holidaying on Kangaroo Island. So here's the first one, and she's got that up in the cafe. That is, as you can see, of the jetty at Kingscote. The next is of Seal Bay, and that's with our very special friends, the Lamberts. But as you can see, there are no seals on the beach because they looked a bit splotty. So I didn't put seals on the beach, but that is Seal Bay. Thank you for enjoying my humour. You're very, very lovely. The last is of Stokes Bend. It's got a bit of a story to it. I gave it to my dentist to put in her surgery. And she put it up so that people can see it when they sit in the chair. 2 other women said, can we put our art up as well? So now there are 3 pieces of art. And another woman said, can I put my little painting of a pomegranate in? So there's a small table and there's this open pomegranate. And 2 plants, pot plants that someone else has brought in to make the place look attractive. And on the other wall, a painting by her 80-year-old daughter in pinks and blues. It's just like a mini art gallery. You don't even think of the injection. You've got so much to look at. The last is with Bestries Bay. And I painted this for Kylie's husband, Rick. He used to fish at Bestries Bay, and he asked for a painting. I said, yes, sure, I'd love to do one for you. I said to Kylie, is this the place where he fishes? Yes, that's where he fishes. So there's the painting. And I showed it to Rick. I took it in, and he was very polite. He said, oh, I love it. It's very nice indeed. But Janet, we actually used to fish around on the other side of that promontory. So, whoops, never mind. I did try. So, delightful art galleries. Beautiful. Elizabeth had lovely sayings at her birthday, and we chose one each. Hope, like a child, jumping in puddles, has no time for sadness or regrets. There she is, our beautiful granddaughter. I love you, Grandma. I love you too, my darling. Thank you, everybody.
In particular, the religious art of the Italian Renaissance, although I will also refer to art from the more northern countries of Europe. The Renaissance was a movement that spanned two centuries, roughly from 1400 to 1600, although there were several notable contributors who worked outside those years, both before and after, as we shall see. These two centuries covered what has been described as an explosive period in European history, which started as a rejection of medievalism. American art historian Ian Barrahill has described it as a quickening of the imagination, a new and daring respect for human personality, a springtime of awakening passion after a winter of dormant feeling through the dark years of medieval Christian belief. Parallel with the development in art was a development in self-awareness, which we would call humanism, bringing a new respect for mankind and allowing the outpouring of passions and intellect, demonstrating that men and women were far more than mechanical puppets of an invisible God. It's significant that along with this artistic revolution, there was a parallel upheaval in religious and scientific thought, which threw down a challenge to the champions of the status quo, most notably in the form of the all-powerful and omnipresent Catholic Church. In this connection, we think of Martin Luther, Jan Hus, Emanuel Swedenborg, Faustus Socinus, Michael Servetus, Desiderius Erasmus, Galileo Galilei, and a host of other philosophers and thinkers of the religious Reformation. However, our subject is art, and so I'd like to take you through a brief chronology to check out the work of some of the most notable artists from an age of exceptionally notable artists. Firstly, Giotto. Not strictly a Renaissance man, Giotto nevertheless showed the way. His frescoes depicting the entire story of Jesus, as it were in a series of slides, around the wall of the Arena Chapel in Padua. His work demonstrates his skill in bringing forward the hitherto neglected human personality of religious figures, and the chapel is illustrated with panels all around the wall following the career of Jesus right through. Unfortunately, I've never had the pleasure of seeing it in person, only in photographs. One of my ambitions was to get to Padua and have a good look at it. And just a note about frescoes, a fresco is not just a wall painting. It's a painting done rapidly in watercolour, on wet plaster, on a wall or ceiling, so that the colours penetrate the plaster and become fixed as it dries. And you have to be pretty well skilled and work very, very quickly. There's no room for error in putting up a fresco. This is one of the fresco panels that Giotto painted. Masaccio. Masaccio was born in 1401. And died at the early age of 27, but nevertheless in his short life enlightened his contemporaries sufficiently for them to take on a new direction in painting. He's known as the father of Renaissance painting, his frescoes being regarded as the definitive expression of humanistic man. His figures not only show animation and a human appearance, but they also display emotion. And here we have an emotional pair, Adam and Eve, ashamed and fleeing the wrath of God. Such passion. Moving towards the north a bit, we have now Jan van Eyck. Meanwhile, in Flanders, the northern epicentre of the Renaissance, Artists like Jan van Eyck were emerging. Van Eyck is credited with pioneering the use of mixing pigments with linseed oil, enabling the building up of a picture slowly, thus permitting greater precision of detail than had previously been achievable. Del Castagno. This growing humanistic regard for people as creatures of emotion and intellect, not merely puppets of religious theory, is amply illustrated by Del Castagno's David. The figure is given presence and volume by the use of shadow and perspective. David is in the throes of emotional exhaustion after his battle with Goliath, whose head we see between his feet. The painting is a brilliant interpretation of David the man. Hans Memling. Although German-born, Memling lived most of his life in Bruges. This is part of a centre panel of a triptych depicting the Virgin enthroned, flanked by the family of Sir John Donne, who commissioned the work. Memling is best known for his altarpieces and other religious paintings, although he did produce some secular works. As you can see, his paintings are characterised by what might be termed an air of quiet piety and the use of vivid colours. Fra Angelico. Probably one of the more conservative of the early Renaissance painters, he was influenced by Gothic traditions of decorative order, as well as the work of Masaccio. There is a certain simplicity about his paintings, yet he drew upon contemporary developments in using colour and perspective. And probably one of the most definitive paintings of the Renaissance, well actually it's not a painting, it's a fresco, Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper. Da Vinci, probably the genius of the age, or any age for that matter, although his artistic output was nowhere near as prolific as his contemporary Michelangelo, what he did produce was sublime. Here is his famous fresco of the Last Supper, not just a number of biblical figures, mind you, but so skillful is the artist that each figure displays his own personality. Raffaello, who was also a contemporary of Da Vinci and Michelangelo, or Raphael, if you're an Anglophone, was contemporary with Leonardo and Michelangelo. He considers Hill, the historian I quoted earlier, he considers this painting quite out of step with the Renaissance humanistic view of passionate thinking man. It has a certain sweetness, he contends, which is observable in the softening of the outlines and the roly-poly children. Grunewald, another German painter. Grunewald's name was forgotten for many years after his death. Western religious art displays a long line of suffering Christs, but this one surely has the most violent impact. This is the central panel of an altarpiece in the monastic hospital's chapel where patients came to prepare themselves spiritually for medical treatment. And, well, you can only just surmise what medical treatment that would be. Help was commonly sought from the four saints below the cross. And note in this talk, I'm not including, for those of you who actually visited art galleries in Europe, I've not included any pictures of Saint Sebastian. I remember going around and saying, oh no, not another Saint Sebastian. This guy with his arrows all sticking out of him. Michelangelo. This incredible work is on the end wall of the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican. After an interval of some years, Michelangelo had been invited to return to complete the painting of the chapel. It took him 5 years to complete this fresco. Here on the ceiling on the chapel is part of the monumental work for which Michelangelo is famous, along of course with his David and the Pietà, both sculptures. David of course being venerable in Florence and the Pietà in St. Peter's in Rome. As I said, this period was a period of Reformation as well as Renaissance, and it was in 1517 that Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Church. In a society and an era when virtually everyone was Catholic and the Church was as powerful as the most powerful of monarchs, this could be seen as rather a limiting career move on the part of Luther, as he was in fact an ordained priest. These theses challenged the authority of the Pope, the nature of penance and the collection of indulgences. Remember, indulgences were amounts of money paid to the Church in the hope that you would be given a seat in heaven. Luther's act was a catalyst for the full release of rumblings about the Church, which had been simmering under the surface for some time. Soon the Reformation was in full swing, erupting in turmoil and strife right across Europe as the Catholic Church struggled to reassert its authority. Durer's work, showing the four horsemen of the apocalypse, reflect the turmoil and presage the religious wars that raged for another century or so. Raffaello again, this is actually what might be termed a cartoon, not being what you see in the paper these days, but a preliminary drawing, and it's one of the many art tapestry designs made for the Sistine Chapel and commissioned by Pope Leo X. This particular painting is now in the custody of the Victorian and Albert Museum. This is a painting by Tintoretto. Hill observes that the central theme of the painting, that is the Nativity, has been superseded by the dramatic effects of the setting, the derelict roof, the scattering of straw, the general chaos. The painting, he says, seems hurried and careless, and it may be that the artist's design was finished by his students. One of the non-Italians, inspired by the Renaissance artists, Poussin's working life followed usually recognised Renaissance period in that he was born in 1594, so he was one who came right at the end and in fact overflowed, if you like, into the next period of painting. He lived in Paris for a time, studying the works of his Italian predecessors, but then from 1623 he travelled in Italy, studying these works at first hand before settling in Rome. He became the greatest French exponent of the classical style. And then we have the master. Another later artist and northerner, Rembrandt, throughout his career, was particularly responsive to his predecessors of the Italian Renaissance. Although he was a gifted portrait painter and is known for a number of great secular works, and that springs to mind straight away is The Night Watch. I don't know if you know it, but when we visited the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam about 10 years ago, you walk into this room and there's this huge painting which would cover that back wall. It was cut down to so they could move it into the place. It's The Night Watch, and it's a painting of a group of citizens who used to go out every night and presumably keep order, presumably before there was a police force, although Iran might be able to tell us a bit more about that at some stage. But it's a huge painting. It's 4.45 metres wide and 3.7 metres high. It's one of his great works, but he was also very much a religious artist apart from all that. And he was a Calvinist actually by upbringing, but then in Amsterdam he was associated with the Mennonites, who are very undogmatic, probably still are actually. And so we've had a brief glimpse at the sample of the great religious art of a remarkable era. Many, if not most, of these artists worked on commissions, either from popes who were seeking to perpetuate their legacies, for example the powerful Medici family of Florence, or from wealthy and well-to-do citizens who gifted paintings to the Church, often in order to secure a seat in the hereafter. Indeed, as we saw in the Memling painting, many of the figures depicted as being biblical were actually portraits of the artist's patrons and their families. Thus did religious art, primarily propaganda for the pre-literate populace, cross over into the secular. Our closing words from Henri Matisse. Any art or all art worthy of the name is religious.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.